everyone. I hope it works now. I'm glad to be here with you today, and I feel privileged to share some of my work and experiences. And I would like to thank the organizer of this conference and kind invitation, particularly from Professor Janer and Ferial Taslaman, and other in the team of this conference, and Bahçeşehir University to hosting all of us. I'll be speaking today about religion and feminist production of knowledge in the Balkans semi-periphery, and I will explain all of these terms at the beginning of my presentation. So in the first part of my presentation, I will discuss the dynamic of inclusion and exclusion in knowledge production between the center-west and the Balkans semi-periphery. In the second part of my presentation, I will talk about the rise of religious feminism and the initiatives of Muslim and Christian women who advocated for gender equality in that region. And in the third part, I will refer briefly to the three successful models and initiatives that enable productive dialogue and activism. The first one is Women Believers and Citizens Initiative, the second one is Feminism and Religion School, and the third one is University and Gender Resource Center that we established at the University of Sarajevo with 18 universities in the Balkans region, gathering Croatia, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Serbia, Montenegro. So at the beginning, I would like to remind all of us what word feminism stands for. What is feminism? Is this feminism, is it about women who are disobedient, who wears mustaches, who wants to expel men and rule over men, as we usually see these kind of arguments? I would say no. Feminism is an idea, it's a movement, but also a theory, and it goes against sexism, oppression, exploitation, and marginalization. Believe me, women don't want to rule over men. They want to rule over their own lives and over their own bodies. So, when we look back a bit in the last 40 years, we can see, for instance, in the 1970s, especially in the United States, that they have started to question the mainstream knowledge production. And first of all, in sociology, anthropology, and other disciplines, they starting adding women's perspective to the existing building of patriarchy. But very soon, they realized this is not enough. It's not going to work. This is not a solution. So women scholars said for the knowledge to be called feminist knowledge, it should question the power asymmetry, to empower women, to shake the foundations of patriarchy, to change the status quo, and to advocate for emancipatory gender policies, to use gender as an analytical category, and to interpret the world from women's perspective. But to do that, feminist theoreticians and scholars take into account body, experience, and emotions as source of knowledge. And of course, as Donna Haraway and other scholars noticed and reminded us, the knowledge is always situated, and the context matters a lot. The world and international the world and the international politics, education, and economy in general operate on a variety of dualisms. And on one hand, we have secular religious divide that marked the second half of 20th century and the beginning of 21st century. On the other hand, we have appearance of religiously based feminists and initiatives, you know, to question that. Many scholars, even today, insist on the existence of secular religious divide characterized by irreconcilable secular and religious perspective when we talk about gender equality. So we have antagonism between religion and secularism, as well as between secular and religious feminists. They continue to put in opposition the two. But as John Ballard Scott, an American historian, said, they are discursively codependent, because she explains, after the French Revolution, women didn't get full emancipation. They won suffrage rights, right to education, workforce, even to be politically engaged, but they are still struggling to obtain full emancipation and participation in public life and in every segment of life. So this was not enough. But there was a wide gap between what was specified by legislation and results in practice. We have disparity, and in some regions, like in the Balkans, where we have an important intersection of gender, religion, nationality, ethnic identity, and especially, you know, after the war in 1990s, and in the post-war context, we had to address gender equality issues intersectionally, taking into account all of these identities. So one of the ways to examine the interplay between secular and religious feminism is to add what Immanuel Wallerstein calls the world zones. He divides the world into four zones. The center, of course, is the West. This is the core. And then there is periphery. This is outskirts of Europe, where the Balkans belong. And there are external arenas, two external arenas. So the Balkans is kind of a semi-periphery. Sometimes it is easier to be periphery than the semi-periphery. You are Europe, but not real Europe. So the Balkans is a semi-periphery, as I said, to the Western center, but within the Balkans semi-periphery itself, religious, feminist, academic, and civil society discourses are the periphery. Secular feminism as periphery of secularism shows similar behavior in its own discourse and activism to its center. In the semi-periphery of Western secularist scholarship is Western liberal feminism, which, as Chandra Mohanty, an American scholar, points out, often legitimizes the liberated Western women versus oppressed third world women, which has effect of supporting existing power asymmetry that contribute to the very cycle of oppression they've been trying to eradicate. So I want to contribute to this debate of inclusion and exclusion between the center and semi-periphery with the relations, or better to say, lack of relations between secular and religious feminisms. My thesis and my main argument is that the knowledge production in the Balkans semi-periphery is artificially divided between secular and religious feminist circles. Just as feminists from the center marginalized feminists in the Balkans with neocolonial approaches and the cultural hegemony, secular feminists in the semi-periphery ignore religious feminism. So we have the circle of marginalization. It is important also to note that while secular civil society organizations in many cases in that region, especially after 1990s, after the war, they created a space for gender and religion debate. They integrated these topics into their discussion. But at the same time, they didn't support it that these teams become integral part of academic life, to become official academic courses or part of the courses. And this is because, Janan mentioned it in her own presentation, because of the disconnection between scholarship and practice. And as Mohanty, I'm quoting her again, said, you know, if we basically disconnect the two, if we academicians sit only in our classrooms and do not check and test our theories in the field, we basically support politicization of practice. So the two should go hand in hand. Now I want to say something about the top-down approach that we have in that region. So, torn by contradictory impulses from the semi-periphery and the center, gender theoretical and activist development hasn't been recognized in full capacity. Most academic researchers and activists are funded by foreign donors, so we have donor politics. And they don't want to share that piece of funding with religious feminists. So this is one part of the problem. But also the post-war context of the Balkans, which is not yet part of EU, it is on its own way to EU accession, is burdened with huge poverty, nationalism, ethnic and religious homogenization, religious conservatism. All these problems affect also this topic. So these countries are under huge pressure, on one hand, to pursue modernization and become part of the core of the West, and at the same time, to maintain traditional, cultural, and religious values. On one hand, there is the Western secular paradigm that strives to assimilate all local efforts in the semi-periphery for gender equality into a particular framework, mostly liberal feminist framework, with emphasis on civil and political rights and individual freedom without social and economic rights that women in Yugoslavia had very well resolved. On the other hand, there is a local culture that is heavily impregnated with customs and religious norms that govern especially family lives and consequently women's lives. So, and they both had impact on epistemological and civic framework development. So it has to be taken into account that knowledge production goes hand in hand with capital and language hegemony. In the last couple of years, knowledge production has also been influenced by religious fundamentalism, visible especially in Catholic churches around Europe, but also in some Muslim communities. So we have to be cautious about power relations and privileges of the center that dictates the science and research trends, that legitimizes epistemic frameworks we have to comply and follow, and also what they exclude and what they include. So feminists from the Balkans region collaborate with Western feminists, but power relations dictate these relations in the way from the center. Many secular feminists have access to funding, resources, jobs in academia, etc., while religious feminists, scholars, are completely marginalized. Some religious feminists in the Balkans are even persecuted as gender ideologists, which is the case especially in Croatia by the Catholic Church, because every attempt to make the changes, to shake the foundation of patriarchy, goes with labels that these women are going against family, against tradition, cultural and religious norms, against their own churches and their own religious communities. Men, I have to say, are mostly silent, because they think that gender equality is not their own business. But it is. it is your business as it is our business. So religiously based feminism in the Balkans started in small circles of scholars in the late 70s, primarily within the Catholic tradition, because after the Second Vatican Council from 1965, they had more room to work on that. But before 1990s, neither Orthodox Christian nor Muslims had anything that could be categorized as feminist theology. So just as secular feminism was available mostly to academic circles at universities in former Yugoslavia, religious feminism was also visible only among scholars focused on liberation theology in Catholic tradition, and also later liberation theology in Muslim traditions. So feminist and religious identities were highly contested. And being a feminist was not acceptable, but being a religious feminist is inconceivable still today, especially when you go somewhere and say you are Islamic or Muslim feminist, people cannot put two together. So the socialism in former Yugoslavia, in the Balkans region, didn't support autonomous movement, including the feminist movement in that region, because it had a limited understanding of freedom, because gender equality was imposed top-down from the state, and the state wanted to control feminist work. And because they believed that women's question was resolved by the socialist state. There was no other question to be discussed. As religion was marginalized from public life, the socialist state didn't want to do anything with religion in public life, including religious feminism. However, that's been changed in 1990s when religion was revived and when the socialist ideology was replaced by ethno-national ideology and ethno-religious ideology that used a religion as a powerful tool to mobilize people for wars, and they are still at power. Religious feminists remained excluded, and they experienced triple marginalization by the secular state, by secular feminists, and by their own religious communities and churches. And who would want to be a feminist when you have triple marginalization? So it's a hard work. Now I'm going to say something about secular conception of knowledge, how it is imposed to all of us. Western secular epistemological discourse exports neutral and objective scientific arguments requiring everyone from the semi-periphery to comply with these standards, shaped by specific vocabulary and writing styles that diminish all the richness of local style and framework of argumentation. So certain feminist discourses, particularly those that are religiously based, are considered backwards, an obstacle to equality and freedom within the local context, and are not taken into account at all. In her critique of secularism and liberalism, late anthropologist Saba Mahmoud, probably you are aware of her work, discovers how secularism as sociocultural project imposes a liberal privatized model of religiosity with a number of presuppositions about freedom and autonomy of an individual. The liberal conception of autonomy assumes that a person is capable of enacting her own desire from the force of transcendental will, tradition, and custom. Furthermore, secularized conception of religiosity consider rituals and scripture inessential to the universal truth it symbolizes. Liberal feminists, therefore, cannot understand and accept, for instance, a Muslim woman as autonomous subject with free will to submit to God when she covers her head and practices modesty in clothing. So it is not acceptable. So if state institutions, especially educational institutions, want to eradicate discriminatory practices and stereotypes, They should include religious feminist perspective into its gender equality policies and practice, because religious norms intertwined with cultural norms, as we heard many times during the panels, in fact, govern the lives of many women in this and other regions. Keeping in mind the Balkan semi-periphery context, in which ethnic divisions very often overlap with religious divisions, and ethnic religious identity mostly correspond with each other, it is crucial to enable more connections between feminist production of knowledge and feminist practice to avoid exclusion and marginalization. Those who do not follow the dictate of liberalism and secularized liberal religious subject. Secular feminists ignore religious feminist work and efforts to deconstruct nature-culture dichotomy. There is a rich literature of theological anthropology in Christianity and Islam, which is rooted in secular philosophical arguments about nature of women and men. They are heavily influenced by Aristotelian dualism and division between the soul and body, ratio and emotions, etc. But as John Wallace Scott notices, secularists just replaced God with nature and natural law. That from Aristotelian time till today legitimizes nature-culture dichotomy and subjugation of a woman to a man. So basically we have the same arguments in secular sphere as we have in religious sphere. So what to do? How to bridge that gap? We have seen that there are multiple exclusions and power relations in knowledge production, but that didn't completely diminish the work of religious feminists in this region. Within the broader secular feminist movement, there are a few niches, few pockets, where religious feminism survived and even flourished over time, especially after the 1990s. Some women, including myself, have decided to create the agenda and not to wait the other to do it for them. We refused to be an object of the debate, but we wanted to create the debate. We didn't want to be constantly in defensive position to defend ourselves for being Muslims, waiting for others to be invited somewhere to speak. We created platforms and we invited others to join us. So this is the way, not to be in defensive position constantly. It's tiring. We managed to include religion as one of the topics, not the most important and not the only one, but as one of them. So I'm going to just briefly say a few words. Do I have time? Okay. Few words about these three initiatives. The first one, we called it Women Believers and Citizens. It is a unique program launched in 2006 in Bosnia and Herzegovina, Croatia, Serbia, and other Balkans countries with the support of UN Women. We managed to produce training material for women. It started as a grassroots activism, and then we moved it to academia. So the aim was to bridge the gap between secular and religious understanding of human rights and gender equality, and we use the framework of CEDAW Convention, Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, and UN Security Resolution 1325 on Women, Peace, and Security. This was the international framework, and also the framework of religious traditions of Christianity and Islam. So it was the first comparative studies of women's rights within the feminist theological framework. And now it is important material in local languages in the Balkans, and it is literature for the courses at universities. So it started as civil society initiative and became an important part of the academic teaching. From 2016, Ecumenical Women's Initiative from Croatia, it's a big international organization that gathers women from all religious traditions, continue these trainings all around the region, and they basically started to include also men.
I said you have time, but you have only 3 minutes.
Okay. And the second initiative is School on Feminism and Religion that started last year. And we offer 10 courses, Gender, Religion, and Peace Building. As you can see, Feminism in the West and East, Gender, Religion, and Media, etc., etc. And the third initiative is a part now of the university framework in academia. So we have 18 universities on board. We have developed programs, syllabi. We are changing the curricula at the university. And for the first time at secular universities, we have a religious perspective integrated into the teaching process, either as modules or the entire courses. And I would like to conclude this presentation with one of the comic book novels. I hope you can see. This is a piece of art that we use as a tool to address gender stereotypes and also to address this secular religious divide. And I want to thank you.
Thank you. So,